Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, today we're going to begin our men's panel discussion of Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. Last two times, we've let the ladies give their views. Now we want to get some male perspective on this book. So with me in the studio today are Mr. Daryl Hope, who is editor of our foreign language websites. We also have George Haddad. He's a junior here at Herbert W. Armstrong College. He is my personal assistant who helps me manage the PCOG.com website. And he also handles my personal social media and also a bunch of other things we don't have time to list. Also with me is John A. Wood, but he's better known as Jack. We call him Jack. He is a senior at Herbert W. Armstrong College, and he's one of my very favorite, very capable Shakespeare students. So welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good to be here, Mr. Lee.
Oh, sorry. Sorry for interrupting you, but I'll call you in, and then they'll get to know your voice. So we had a very great discussion with the ladies' panels. It was a lot of fun. And I guess I have to be careful. My wife reminded me I should probably call them women's panels. But anyway, we just had great fun, and certainly we all enjoyed doing it today. But basically what I want to do is I want to get all of your opinion of the book, just maybe from a male perspective. But before we do that, what I want to do is I want to give you a quote from an author that I've really learned to appreciate. His name is William Darrowswitz. And he is an author. He's a literary critic. He's also a contributor for The Nation. He is a contributor for the American Scholar and also the New Republic. And while doing graduate work, he was forced to read six of Jane Austen's novels in one summer. He had a little bit of resistance to doing that, but actually after doing that, he's written a great book called A Jane Austen Education, How Six Novels Taught Me About Love, Friendship, and the Things That Really Matter. So it's really a great book. I do recommend it. We will not be reading it on the radio at this time, but certainly you can pick it up from Amazon if you would like to read it. I think it's very valuable and worthwhile read. So here's the quote that I wanted to give you, and this is really kind of reflects some of my thinking about the book, and that's why I'm reading the quote. And here's how it goes. He says, "Jane Austen was about a year old when another English author wrote a statement that could serve as a motto for all of her books." Here's that quote. It says, "Life is a comedy for those who think," said Horace Walpole, "and a tragedy for those who feel." Now, I thought that was really kind of insightful that Darrowswitz would kind of marry this with the book by Jane Austen on Pride and Prejudice. I thought that was really interesting. Now, here's the thing, he goes on to say, "Everyone thinks and everyone feels, but Jane Austen's question was, which are you going to put first? Comedies are stories with happy endings." And this is still Darrowswitz talking about himself. He said, "I could grow up and find happiness. Austen was letting me know, but only if I was willing to give up something very important. Not my feelings, but my belief in my feelings, my conviction that they were always right." And he goes on to say, "This was not easy to swallow." And so on the last panel, we did talk about Pride and Prejudice as a novel of character building. It's all about character. It's about overcoming your weaknesses. So, gentlemen, now I want to get your take on the book. So, Derry, we'll let you start first.
Well, I have to admit that I have a certain prejudice, I guess, towards these kinds of books, because I really love books of the 18th and 19th century. And what I really love about it is the value of language, the language in this book, and the way that the use of vocabulary, the way the characters express themselves, the way they talk in their soliloquies. It's just riveting to be able to see that level of language and to really even realize that people actually talk to one another like that on a daily basis. To see that's really amazing in a book like this, and that's the great value of it, I think. And it's good just for understanding language. It's great for English language learners to read a book like this because it really sets the language in a framework of silver, you could say. It also is a glimpse into the importance of personal development. I think when you look at this novel and you realize the development of each of the characters in terms of their own education and the way that they express themselves and what they've thought about and how they view their feelings and yet how they have their opinions and their very strong opinions, and those opinions are based on education that they've had. To see that and to see it played out at such a high level, I think, is a great value, and that's the value that you see in these kinds of books.
One of the things that I think was, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the other programs or not. We're also busy around here at the college, especially this time of year. We now have a summer camp going on. We have 120 campers here, and they're being instructed. But one of the things that I brought out in the last couple programs, and also Sarah Evans contributed quite a bit to it, is I was just impressed at how, let's say when there was a ball, then they've talked about Netherfield, and they've talked about that ball, and that's at the very opening of the book. But how the dances would last, I mean, if you ask someone to dance, the dance tended to last for a half an hour.
Right.
And what you did at the dance is you had a discussion. Mm-hmm. And there's the whole, that's the whole situation when you know, finally, it's not at the Netherfield ball, but at the second ball, Darcy and Elizabeth get to dance. And he's not saying much because we know he doesn't say much. But then all of a sudden, Elizabeth starts the conversation. And then she realizes, hey, I'm starting the conversation. This is the man's job. He should be starting the conversation. And so I think that what you're saying about language and about being able to intellectually or discuss things because of your education, that was very much a part of society. But unfortunately, we're losing that now. And I do attribute it, as much as some people don't want to agree with me, I attribute a lot of that to political correctness. People are so afraid to express their opinion now. They're so afraid to tell you what they really think. Well, because it could be viewed as wrong, and then you could be ridiculed and ostracized and bullied because you have a strong opinion on something. And so it really does come out, I think, very clearly in the book. So sorry for interrupting.
No, and I think that's true. I think actually, you know, reading is one of the things, too, that was typical of the people of that age, and we've gotten more away from that, you know, in our society, and that contributes to that as well. But that personal development aspect and the importance of social protocol, like you say, in terms of their conversation, the importance of being adept verbally is very important in that society. You have to really be able to speak things and speak them very clearly and speak them in a way that people understand, and that is, you know, reaches a certain modicum of social acceptation, and that's not what we see commonly today. And the idea of good taste, that good taste is important, that is throughout the novel, that you see really good taste at all levels of society, even those that aspire to be at a higher level. They see the value of good taste, even though they themselves maybe don't practice it, but they see the value of it. And so there is a standard in society that's very clear that people aspire to. And that's good to see in a novel in society like that. You have to, again, look at the author and the attention to detail. There's so much attention to detail in the way the author writes and how the author concludes and finishes up things and ties up ends and does all of the necessary homework as an author, which is interesting to see. And her ability to really analyze human nature. It's amazing the way she can... the author looks at human nature and analyzes it and plays on this whole theme of pride and prejudice. I mean, throughout the novel, there are allusions to pride and prejudice. And I went through, as I was reading the novel, and just circled every time that word, either pride or vanity or prejudice, was mentioned. And it's throughout the book. and in many of the soliloquies and conversations that take place. And so there's this constant play between that, which really gets into more of the characters and what happens with the characters. But it's sort of a thread that flows through this book in its entirety.
Yeah, to me, Pride and Prejudice is very similar to Shakespeare, mm-hmm. in the sense that, and of course I haven't read Emma or Sense and Sensibility, mm-hmm. but I'm definitely planning to read all of them. I'm going to do my sixth novel, what do you call it? My binge watching, or it would be my binge reading for later. But the thing that really does come out is that. She had to spend a lot of time thinking, putting this novel together.
Absolutely.
And I brought it out in one of the other programs that this was actually the first novel she wrote, but they wouldn't publish it. And so she put it aside for like 2 or 3 years while she was writing some other things, and then went back to it. And I think that's why it can be seen as something really deep. But I do think today we don't really care about human nature in the sense that you need to overcome it, or that you need to fix it, or you need to change it. We just kind of follow our emotions, which I thought Derosiewicz's comment was amazing. It's like everybody gets a feeling, and well, if that's they believe their feeling is absolutely accurate, and they have a right to act on those feelings, that's why society falls apart.
Right.
And that's what's really happening in today. But even if you notice, I know there are a lot of people that criticize Britain for having a structured society. But I think even Austin brings out that still, as a young woman, you could marry up in society. And now there's this whole thing between Bingley and Darcy, whether they should marry down.
Right.
But still, in the end, what really came out, what really comes out at the end is they chose women of character. Not necessarily just for money or for, you know, but good breeding was important.
Right.
You know, so anyway, I just think it's fantastic in terms of human nature. And of course, I love studying about that anyway, because we do have to overcome it.
Right. Yes. I think that psychological aspect is what is appealing to men in reading the book, because your first take in reading the book is the sort of preponderance of female characters and female interaction, and that can sometimes be a little tedious. But when you start to realize the content of what they're saying and start to analyze that and realize the depth of that, then that makes it appealing, I think, to a male reader.
Okay, well, thank you. Okay, let's move on to George. George, let's get your take.
Yes, I very much enjoyed the book. In school back in Australia, we never touched on Austen or Shakespeare very much. So I completely agree when you say that this is like Shakespeare, because studying Shakespeare now and then reading this, I'm like, there's a lot of similarities, and I very much like the human nature aspect of this book. I agree completely with Mr. Hope when he says the psychological side behind it is what draws me into it, because I found myself like reading about the balls. I'm like, I'm not really interested in about the event of the ball or about the dancing. I'm more interested about what's happening behind the scenes. Like what are the characters thinking about? How are they reacting to things? And I think Jane Austen does a really good job at giving a lot of detail in a small amount of pages. I was finding myself sitting and reading, and I was like, I feel like I'm in the Bennett home. I feel like I'm watching Mr. Bennett sit in his chair as he's talking to Elizabeth. I feel like I'm watching Mrs. Bennett run around like a headless chicken and just gagging and gagging and gagging and talking about all this stuff. I just found myself sitting in that home. And I think that's a testament to a good author. If they can draw me in like that and give me those vivid images in such a short amount of time, I'm very much interested in a book like that. And then the human nature aspect, I completely agree that this is about change and this is about progress. I also agree with the fact that society today doesn't care about the change side. It's more of a accept me for who I am type thing. And the whole Derosiewicz quote where he talks about my belief and my feelings and conviction that they were always right, like that is exactly what I felt about this book. I completely agree with the idea, like this book made me question my feelings towards things. You know, I heard a lot about this book before reading it. I know a lot of people have opinions about this book, have opinions about the characters in this book. But then I found myself thinking, I was like, okay, do I now have opinions because I think I'm right and I'm just going to hold fast to them because I'm right, or do I actually have foundation? Am I actually thinking about it, or is it just purely emotion-based? And then that can translate into life. I mean, these characters, the ones that changed and the ones that grew to be liked were the ones that examined their lives and were like, okay, I need to change that about me. I need to change that character trait that is not likable, or I'm prideful, I'm prejudiced. And they ended up changing and they ended up growing in that. And I think that is a big theme in this book. The whole idea of the characters that you grow to like are the ones that grow.
I think that's really true. I know that we'll talk about the. I do want to get into more of the male characters, since we are men. So, but the thing is, I know I resisted wanting to read it because I always thought it was a romance novel, and then in our last couple programs, Elizabeth Clark came in and she just totally slayed that immediately. She says, this is going to seem extreme. I know I'm a young woman from England. This is not a romance novel. She said it's a side thing, but the thing is, it's all about. It's kind of like as Derewitz even said, it's about growing up, and it's about growing up right. And to grow up right, you need breeding. You know, you need to have education. You know, you need to be able to discuss things. You need to be able to express your opinion. And because even if you don't express your opinion, what if you're wrong? If you don't express it, you can't fix it, you know, kind of thing. But certainly the romance is there. But even when we get into discussing the characters, we have to discuss Jane and Bingley just a little bit. I mean, they're the ones that really have almost like the perfect love affair. They don't have any drama. But how does that make you feel? How did that make you feel, George, when you read about that?
Yeah, I think what you're saying about people think it's a romance book, and I think that's tied into the feelings. There's a lot of feeling in this book, and I think that's what Jane Austen's trying to address. You know, these characters at the beginning, it's all about feeling. It's all about how they feel, how they, you know, they just emotion-based. And I think people take that, especially today in our time, and they read a book and they say, oh, these characters feel a lot, therefore it's a romance. It's like, no, that's the point of the book. They feel a lot. There's a lot of problems. Look what happens when they start to think. It's not necessarily a romance just because there's feelings. And personally, when I was reading it, I didn't think it was a romance because I just didn't think there was much romance. I was like, these characters don't really like each other. That's not a romance to me. That's a, you know, there's clearly a lot of tension. And even with Jane and Bingley, I was like, this is kind of boring. I don't really care about their relationship. It's like, in my mind, I'm like, they're probably going to get together in the end because Jane Austen made it clear that they liked each other. I'm like, clearly she's not going to just crush that. I was like, that's boring, though. There's got to be some tension, and that's what other characters provided.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Okay, Jack, let's move on to you. So now you've heard a few other opinions, so give us yours.
Yeah, certainly can. Yeah, like Dershowitz here in that quote at the start, I was forced to watch the BBC miniseries back when I was a child. Growing up with a bunch of brothers, Mum wanted to educate us, so she thought that Jane Austen would be a wonderful way to do that. Growing up with this miniseries, I grew to hate the books because I was forced to watch them. And initially, as a young man, the romance novel did not appeal to me. But I tell you what, as I grew up and grew to appreciate literature more and grew to understand literature more and the various themes that literature can have, the more I grew to see that this was not a romance novel, as you're saying, and it is actually a multi-dimensional versatility of themes that come into this book. Mr. Hope, you said it was a study in human nature. You gained so much about the character depth and you learned so much about characters and about personal growth out of this book. For me, when I read it again recently, I just saw the satire that came from this book. It is really a satirical take on the absurdity of a lot of the culture in the landed gentry of the early 1800s and late 1700s. And for me, it was almost a history book. I know it's fiction and a lot of the characters are false, but her perceptions of the absurdity of the landed gentry and of the upper class and middle class of that time was brought to life, and certainly I could see the absurdity of it too. And I grew to understand that particular period of time, that particular social class, more deeply because of that satire.
I think that's really true. I agree with that 100%. I mean, the whole thing is with the, to me, the most favorite chapter is chapter 34. That's when Darcy proposes to Elizabeth. I mean, that was like the weirdest chapter you could ever read because, you know, here they are. He's actually literally, as Elizabeth said, he's actually criticizing her as he's wanting her to now marry him. You know, he's saying, well, you're this, you're that, you're not this, you're not that. So, but I just want to tell you how much I admire you and love you. Therefore, marry me. And then notice that she is just fuming on the inside. And then all of a sudden, you know, she has to tell him why this is not even possible. You know, this is not going to happen. Mm. And inside she doesn't want to necessarily hurt him, but yet, and she does, you know. But it just shows the whole thing that he's just like this landed gentry snob, and yet all of a sudden he's starting to listen. And actually, Jane Austen is like, she trying to change history. You know, go ahead.
Yeah, I think particularly with the characters of Mr. Collins and Lady de Burgh, she particularly brings that out, the pompous nature of them, their just arrogance as well towards people who they consider lower than them, just because of the social class structure at the time. It really gave me an understanding of that class structure that doesn't really exist in a strong way as today.
Yes.
But okay. Yeah.
Go ahead, continue.
Yeah, I'm but sorry. I think, like I was saying at the start there, it's an incredible thing to see so many opinions coming out of a single piece of literature, and as going tying back to what you were saying about people getting upset by opinions, when it comes down to it, Pride and Prejudice is a work of art. It is a piece of art. Literature is art, and it can't be overstated that with art, the true meaning and value of it comes from the personal interpretation by the one observing the art. So it shouldn't really be an issue. It shouldn't be something that people condemn us for opinions over what really amounts to a work of art.
Yeah, if you notice, like with Elizabeth, she to me, we've talked about this before. I'll just bring it out for all of us fellows here. But I think she is Jane Austen. I think that's the character she's writing for herself. And if you get into any of her letters, I was reading some of her letters getting ready today. She was pretty wicked in her interpretation of these balls and what was happening. And she was really, really very satirical, as you're saying. So it's almost like Pride and Prejudice is a little bit softer, you know, so it's more palatable for the public to read. But this book has never gone out of popularity. No. It's still very popular today. So as Jack was saying, that is art. I mean, Who doesn't like to go look at a Michelangelo today? I mean, who doesn't like to look at, you know, the French, Monet and the, you know, the Impressionists? Who doesn't like to go look at the Dutch masters? I mean, those guys are just, it's still very popular today. And here you have literature the same way. So any rebuttal? Let's see. Now we get a little discussion going to see.
Well, I think Jack's point on satire is true. The work is a work of satire, but you know, it's satire and absurdity, which is really, this is showing the absurdity of human nature, and human nature is absurd, except to the degree that it can change. And that's where she enters with the two characters who change. There are only two characters in this novel that change, that they're really a substantial change. And those are the characters around which really everything revolves.
Right.
Every other character is static. They're static in their absurdity. And that really that makes it very funny in many cases, as the critic here says. It makes it very funny because you look and see how absurd humans are in terms of the way they interact and the ideas they have and the prejudices they hold and the pride they have and so forth. But to the degree that they're able to change, that is where it becomes interesting. And so that's really, and that's where she works with. She worked with Darcy and with Elizabeth, and those are the two characters that change, and that resulting change results in their having the greatest prospect for happiness.
Yes.
So she really is giving a moral lesson here. As you change from your prejudice and your pride and your absurdity, you open the doors to happiness.
Yes.
And that's a key lesson that she gives here.
And think of what an interesting, I mean, they would certainly have had a more interesting life. I know it's a novel. I know they're all made up characters, but the fact that they could be honest with each other. I mean, can you imagine some? I would like to almost write an additional novel now, just like a year in the life with Elizabeth and Darcy after they got married. I think that could be a great novel. And then think about what their kids are going to be like, you know, kind of thing.
There's plenty of fan fiction out there for that. So
yeah.
So, but the thing is again, Jane is just a sweet. She's a sweet person. Bingley is a really honorable guy, but I think she leaves it so that they do look, well, mildly boring, right. You know. But then you bring in Charlotte Lucas, who really doesn't marry for love. She marries for, you know, just to make sure that her status is secure. And then, of course, then you have the whole thing with Lydia, which is just a disaster. And so in other words, Jane brings all of those other things in to really put the spotlight on Elizabeth and Darcy. So go ahead, George, you have a comment. I know you do.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you look at the way that each relationship works, like Mr. Hope said, the ones that changed were the ones that were happy. But I think ultimately they were all happy in what they were doing, because I think the characters, or Jane Austen, does it in a way where they weren't thinking. Mrs. Lucas wasn't really, you know, she was just doing, like you said, to get status. And Jane, she's just a nice girl. She just wanted Mr. Bingley because they would fit together. And all the younger siblings, they're a bit crazy, so they went after the crazy guy. So I think looking at it that way, if each character kind of reveals a different aspect of nature that we all have. You know, I can be a type of Jane. I can be a type of Charlotte. I can be a type of Elizabeth. You know, I can have those characters. I can be a type of Darcy and Wickham and all that. And the thing that she brings out is holding on to those bad traits. You might find someone who agrees with you. You might find someone who belongs with you. But that isn't what brings happiness. That just brings a certain level of contentment, because, you know, you're not thinking about it enough, and it will catch up to you in the end. Like you said, the book ends. We don't know how those relationships go until death, you know. Is Charlotte happy after 5 years, 6 years? What about Elizabeth and Darcy? But she kind of leaves it at a point where you know that they're not going to be. You know that they're not going to be, but you know Elizabeth and Darcy probably will be. And I think that's what's really interesting about the relationships in this book. It's like everyone could fall into any category, because we all have aspects of those characters. It just depends on what you want in life. Do you want to be happy, or do you just want to be content? Right. You can be both if you choose. You just have to be wise and see your own faults, unlike the characters did.
And it is going to take some work to be happy. Happiness just doesn't, it's not spoon-fed. Well, guess what, fellas? We are out of time. And so I didn't do a very good job of monitoring time today, but we're going to have a next program. So for all you listening out there, next time we will continue our men's only panel discussion of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. And of course, I am going to really try and watch the time next time. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. And remember, you can leave me a comment on Facebook. And thank you to all of you that have been out there liking it. It's really good for my statistics, so keep doing it. So until next time, keep reading.
Been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.